Hello again, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele, and I'd like to welcome back my co-host, Ann Cargart. This is the fifth episode in a long line of them that will span over the course of several months as we analyze, critique, and dissect each and every Marvel film in chronological order of release. Last week, we did Captain America First Avenger, and this week, we're going to be talking about The Avengers, the end of Phase 1. Just a friendly reminder, if you like what you're hearing, you can follow us wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Just search Real Talks. That's R-E-E-L Talks. Just like my name, S-T-E-E-L-E. Also, you can follow us on social media. I'm on Twitter at WannabeRounder, LinkedIn, and on Instagram at DCaduto. Where can they find you, Ann?
They can find me at Instagram at frogs_z, so that's FROOGZ_z.
Just one last quick announcement. Our Patreon channel recently went live. You can find it by typing Real Talks into the search bar. Let me tell you a little about it. We're offering 5 different levels you can support us at. $5, $10, $20, $30, and $40. If you do choose to support us, you'll have the opportunity to get some great perks, such as earning your name shouted out before every podcast, cool merch, and if you're one of our major contributors, you'll get a 1-hour monthly Zoom meeting with Illo and myself. For more details, just go to the website. I'll leave the link in the description. So without any further ado, let's dive into the movie. So, back in 2012, what were you doing, or do you remember?
I was still in school, and I was actually seeing this as a date movie with my current husband. I saw it in theaters and had some good memories with it. I had some good Chinese beforehand, splurged on all the movie snacks that are probably 20% more expensive nowadays, but it was a fun time. How about yourself?
I had just come out to California. I've been out here for about 11 years now. I've bounced back between Boston and here. And I was in my freshman year or sophomore year, if you will, of community college. And this was a huge movie back then. And I can remember all of the hype. So I actually went to go see this, I think, as a matter of fact. I still have a couple of the movie tickets. This is when they were still doing movie tickets. But I actually saw it twice in theaters. The first time was amazing, and the second time was even better. So, let's move on. So, a couple of little facts about this. Of course, we all know this was released by Marvel Studios, which at this time was above and beyond making their money back, distributed by Paramount Pictures here domestically. This movie was actually released on the 6th of May, 10 years ago, as we were just talking about. Yeah, 10 years ago and just about a week earlier.
It feels like it was last week.
I know, doesn't it? And you know what? It holds up, too. So the budget of this movie, astounding. Something else I'll just say in a minute. Budget was $220 million. Subsequently, it was the first movie. This was the first movie, Ann, ever to break $200 million in the domestic box office in this opening weekend. Yeah, and it's something. So I was going to say the budget. If you notice the budget of these movies, ever since Iron Man, we've been doing Iron Man, they've been right around 150, 180. This has got to be, I think, the biggest one at over 200 million. So it's just, I mean, they're making their money back and they are successful at this point. So there were only 4 movies up, that Marvel movies, that have out of the top 10 to really do this. Black Panther at 202 million. That went on to grow $700 million domestically. I remember, this is one movie, I don't know, do you remember MoviePass?
Yeah, I mean, I remember like putting in like $5 into the stock.
Right, okay, so I used to have a MoviePass, is millions of others. The way I found out about it was, I think it was on Facebook, and they're like, oh, I got this great thing. And so me being the movie fan, I went, oh, this is pretty cool. So it was like a credit card type of thing for all those people that remember MoviePass. Anyway, subsequently, put in the application, like 6 months later, I get this card in the mail. Okay.
Was it bankrupt at that time, by the time you got the card?
No. I used it to see Black Panther 3 times in the theater. And I bought it at the same time. That tells you how long of a run it had. So, yeah, I went to go back many times to see some of these Marvel films. Infinity War, which actually went on to make $678 million domestically and $2 billion internationally. Spider-Man No Way Home, which recently just hit theaters in December, that went on to gross $804 million domestic and nearly $2 billion worldwide. And then finally, a couple years ago in Endgame, that made $858 million domestic and nearly $3 billion worldwide. Anyways, amazing numbers. So this movie here was directed by Joss Whedon, and it marked the end of our first phase. And at the end of this, I want to get your opinion. I have one, but I want to get your opinion of the five films. We're going to rank them to see which one was the worst to the best. So think about that as we go along. So yeah.
Does that include Avengers, or is it just the...
Yes. Yes, it's going to include. So here's a couple of quick facts about this. Joss Whedon, who actually wrote Toy Story and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Firefly, to name a few, hated the original screenplay. So he told Kevin Feige, the only way I'm going to direct this is if I could rewrite this, which it would have been interesting to see what the original script was. He, Whedon, actually cited The Dirty Dozen, Doctor Strangelove, and Black Hawk Down as inspirations. And he said this, "For me, the X-Men have always had the same problem. It tracks emotionally. These guys don't have it all. They don't belong in the same movie. I used to read The Avengers and love it, but I didn't have the emotional connection to it that I did these certain books. It was just grand sci-fi spectacle and had all the heroes I liked. But my thought was, these guys just don't belong together. Then I was like, wait a minute. That's the movie. That's The Dirty Dozen. There's very little I didn't look at. It's like Doctor Strangelove moment. This is The Abyss. This is His Girl Friday. It's constant. You have to have all this stuff sort of in a blender in your head. And I would say the movie that I probably emotionally referred to the most was Black Hawk Down. I wanted to show a toll on a few soldiers of being in battle for an entire day. It was a beautiful rendering of that, the toll that took the constant pressure." So that's a fascinating getting his insight about how he actually made the script work for this kind of movie. So the movie opens, which I thought was interesting. We didn't just have a title scene. We had a couple of scenes prior to that. So the movie opens with the Tesseract coming along and Nick Fury coming in to assess the situation. And Hawkeye, so once again, Hawkeye's in there. And he's on a perch, hence the name Hawkeye, right? And so it was active. And he looks at Fury's, well, the door opens both ways, right? Because it was acting up. And then, of course, the villain of the movie, Loki, shows up. I think he's probably the most loved. He's got the love-hate relationship of any villain, wouldn't you say?
The lovable trickster. I mean, that's what his role is in mythology. I mean, he's neither good nor bad. He's just kind of an agent of chaos. And then, you know, one day he's one thing, and then the next he's the best friend of Thor instead of the evil villain trying to take over the Earth. So...
yeah. So he turns Hawkeye and the Doctor into his goons using, as somebody said, the glow stick of death. But so then we have a chase with Agent Hill. And so the whole building gets blown up subsequently. So I thought that was a great opening for the title. And then the title sequence comes in. And so it was. So you jumped in right into the action. It was kind of like a James Bond film in that respect. I mean, it wasn't slow, but it wasn't. And so then we move on to Black Widow being interrogated. I think there was one of the great things that we did in the first act was he introduced everybody. I mean, we had seen the pictures like Thor and Captain America and Iron Man, but he introduced each character and what they were doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, to tell you the truth, I mean, some of these movies were kind of far apart, and it helped me personally just to kind of remember who everyone was.
Yeah. So Black Widow, she's being interrogated, and that was a great shot that he used in the mirror. So as he's being tilted down, or she's being tilted down, you see the shot of the, I think it was like a broken mirror or a half of a mirror, and he uses the camera shot for the reflection. I thought that was kind of clever. So, I mean, it starts off at a funny note. And that was, I mean, we've talked about it before, the comedy being inserted in the perfect moments. And one of the bad guys, his cell phone rings. And he says, the proxy says to the general, it's for her. And so the general about to get on, let me tell you this. And he's, Coulson says, we have a F-22 8 miles out. Put the woman on or I'll blow the block up before you can get to make the lobby. Like, okay, got it. So then, of course, you know, that gave me a little bit of a chuckle. But yeah, so And as Black Widow's doing her thing, she's like, I'm interrogating, I'm getting everything out of this guy. And the general's like, what? Really? Because he thinks he's in control at that point. And then Coulson's face is priceless as he's just listening as she's beating up five guys.
He's just, you know, looking at his watch essentially at that time.
Yeah, he's just standing there straight face, and he hears all the racket and he's like, okay. And then I love the shot of the shoes. So she's dressed in all black, hence the name Black Widow, and she picks up the stilettos and it's like, okay. So Coulson says, you gotta go get the quote big guy, which of course everybody knows is the Hulk by now. And so, by the way, did you know the Hulk only appeared in one comic of the Avengers?
Really? I feel like he's kind of like the grenade of the group. I feel like he's kind of a pivotal part.
Yeah. I mean, I guess don't know too much about the comics, but I guess from what I gather, the Avengers were very interchangeable. I mean, they had a couple of core guys, Captain America and Iron Man, but there were a lot of interchangeables. So, but yeah, he only appeared in one of the comics, which I found was fascinating. So she goes to get him, and then Fury's in front of the World Security Council and basically says, this is what they need right now, is the Avengers, instead of, because this World Security Council wants them to focus on Phase 2. And I thought that was kind of an interesting reference. It could have been to Phase 2 of the MCU. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was an interesting thing. But so as the first act is everybody is being reintroduced to us. And Captain America is hitting a punching bag. And Tony Stark is underwater fixing a thing for clean energy. And so everybody's basically, the first act is everybody's being recruited. And so it doesn't really start to pick up steam until they all land on the ship. And once they land on the ship, then it starts to really pick up steam. So you're saying that you like the fact that he was able to reintroduce the characters?
Yeah, and I feel like that it is just a character drama. Like you said, it was from the perspective of these warriors. I mean, obviously the whole event was having an effect on tons of people, and it wasn't just the Avengers, but, you know, they were the people that we identified with throughout the event. But I like how we have a perspective from them, but they're still using that from now until then. Aren't they still doing, they had like that Hawkeye spinoff where he has that young girl,
yes,
who was affected by the invasion by the Chitauri. I like how that they had it from the Avengers perspective, but I like how they're still expanding it to other people. I mean, I like the perspective from the warriors involved, but I also like the fact that they're expanding it even now today. Just kind of that event. It was more like a worldwide event versus just affecting a few characters.
No, absolutely. And that's the thing. And when we get into Iron Man 3 in a couple of minutes, we're also going to talk about, and that's a major plot point there, is that what you were talking about. And Tony has PTSD. And so they're actually trying to equate real world things to these characters. And even what Josh Whedon was saying, and having there be that emotional connection, I think that's why this works so well. So Loki creates the distraction, and they finally, I love how Coulson was like a little fanboy. You know, I have all these cards. You want to sign them for me? You know, and he's like, okay, yeah, sure. And of course that comes into play later on. So they find Loki, and so they go, and they go to Germany. And this is when the first time when everybody starts to come together. So the bad guys get what they need, and then Loki's out. And I found this interesting. Let me get your perspective on this. So you see Loki come out and say, kneel. And so everybody kneels down, and then there's that one older guy stands up. And he says, not to men like you. And Loki responds, well, there are no men like me. And the guy responds, well, there are always men like you. I found it interesting because, A, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, but A was in Germany, and B, it almost, you could have made the correlation. I'm not saying this was true or false, but you could have made the correlation of like him being Jewish and that guy being Hitler.
I mean, I got I got that impression because it was Germany. I mean, I don't know if I particularly got that he was any like denomination, but you know, Germany is very, I mean, they have a different culture against authority. It's not just following orders. It's programmed into them nowadays that if something's wrong, you speak up. Like if you're being ordered by the military to do something unethical, they're taught in school from a very young age that it's your place to question that. It's not something that you just go with. I think out of all the places in the world, Germans are going to be the most outspoken about things that are wrong.
Yeah, no, and you're right. I mean, I wasn't trying to make a correlation. I mean, that was just the first impression I got. I wasn't really trying to make a correlation to it, but I think that you could have actually had that if that was the case. But yeah, no, I thought that was interesting. And it was good standing up and be like, there are no men like me. It's like, there is always men like you. And it's politically, I mean, even today. So anyways, but yeah. So then, of course, it's the first time you see Cap and Iron Man come down and fight together, which is interesting. So I like that old, is it me, Anne? Or they always seem to go back to AC/DC. I mean, this is the third or fourth movie. And where, correct me if I'm wrong,
maybe they bought the license and they're getting the full use out of that copyright because they probably paid a lot of money for it, so they might as well use it.
Yeah, no, they have to. I mean, so the reference I'm making is, of course, Tony overrides the PA system and, you know, he slams down. And he has all the guns out. And he's like, Captain? It's like, Tony. So he makes his grand end. So then we have the perp walk, which I found, I don't know, have you ever seen Man of Steel?
No, I have not.
Okay, so anyways, the Superman movie, there's it, and you see this in a lot of movies. It's like the perp walk where you have all these guards around this prisoner, so because they want to overpower everybody. Yeah, so you could get a perp walk there. And
kind of like Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So then you see really where the tension starts to build when it's Captain, the Cap, and Tony. He's like, well, what, and why call, and why Fury call them in now? And so as the movie progresses, we find Barton comes back and he gets the scepter for Loki. They break him out. And then we get that point of no return scene where everybody's scattered. Yeah. It just, I love the shot where the bickering's going on. They're all in the lab and you just see everybody's talking at once and then you see the bickering. And that's the other thing I've noticed too. Like Josh Whedon used that shot it was effective all three times, but he used that one shot three times where it just circles around everybody and as a group, but it worked.
Well, I mean, that's the iconic scene that everyone thinks of with a superhero movie now. I mean, I've seen so many, you know, satires of it, of that, you know, circling scene. They even made fun of themselves, the Hawkeye series, with the Broadway musical that circling.
I think it was called Rogers the Musical or something.
Right, right.
Yeah. So Barton breaks in, they break Loki out, and then, so as I said, they were scattered. And then I love the Hulk, which finally Banner turns into the Hulk and they go at it. And then you have the fighting between Black Widow and Barton. So this is where, unfortunately, Coulson dies. And so, you know, that was, once again, they love to insert the humor. So he's like, yeah, I don't even know what this does. You know, so of course he comes from the behind, he comes from the back, he stabs him. And then after he's about to die, his finger hits the trigger and he blasts him. But yeah, there's a lot of great scenes, but the other great scene is when Loki and Stark are talking. So that was, I mean, just going back and talking about it was when Stark lands on his tower and he has all these other mechanical things take the suit off for him. And he's like, you know, I'm here to threaten you. So he says, Loki says, I have an army. He's like, yeah, we have a Hulk. So it's, but, and then for the last 20 to 30 minutes is basically the attack on New York. And everybody is...
I have a question for you. Do you think that was that scene established Tony as the leader of the group? I think it did for me.
Yeah, it could have. I think that, yeah, yes and no. I mean, yes, I could see that. And I think Cap really didn't really, up until that point, he didn't have a chance to lead, if you will. Where Tony was more of he took more of the initiative. I mean, let's face it, when he goes out and he gets the rotor taken care of, and maybe it's me, maybe if he can fly, I don't know. But, you know, I mean, that's part of it too. I mean, because Cap's just a soldier. I mean, we see this later on down the road. Like I was saying, in the one scene, he's like, put on the suit and go a couple rounds. I think you see a little power struggle there. And this even transcends everything down in, when we get to Civil War, we'll talk about this. And there are other times throughout this journey that you see these two men butting heads. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, I think what I'll say this, Anne. I think there are certain times where Tony takes the lead, and then I think there are other times when Cap takes the lead. Like, Cap took the lead there at the end when, you know, once again, that circling around shot, and then he took the lead there, and he was calling out orders to everybody. I think Tony took the lead sometimes where he went out and he could do things. So I think he was really trying to play off everybody's strengths one way or the other.
I think he's good at rallying the troops, but I think Tony, personally, is better at taking the initiative. In a crisis situation, like, you know, where you need a first responder situation, he knows how to handle it. But I think Tony is the one who can take advantage and synthesize strange situation, you know, an alien invasion. So,
oh, yeah, of course, because he has that genius mind. I mean, Cap, let's face it, Cap is just a shoulder. He only does what he's told to.
Right. He's a jock.
There are times where Tony takes the initiative, and I think because he has that mind, he's better off. And then there are some times where Cap just does it. So, I mean, this is what the old Team Cap and T-Button is, right?
Right. So we're on opposing sides, so.
Exactly. The last 30 minutes is them going into New York, and the attack begins. So then Banner shows up, and so the payoff. I thought this was a great payoff, though, where it was one time where Banner says, well, I guess you don't get to see my parlor trick today. And then there was another time where he didn't turn into the Hulk until later on when they kept asking him, well, what's your secret? And he's like, that's my secret, Cap. I'm always angry. And then he punches the thing in the nose. You know, it was a great thing of show, not tell type of thing.
Yeah.
And then as we talked about, the circling shot there with all six heroes. So the council wants to then nuke Manhattan for the easy way out. And Fury's like, no, I'm not ordering this on a civilian population until I know my soldiers can't handle it. So he then, Tony, your boy, comes and he takes that nuke and he puts it up into space. He blows up the Chitauri ship and they all go down. As he drops down, the Hulk catches him. And so he lets out a roar and Tony wakes up and is like, please don't tell anybody, kiss me, you know. So, but it was one of those things where, and then of course Tony says, there's a shawarma joint right around the corner. Of course, we always go back to the shawarma thing. So I actually found out, so I actually was looking into this. It's a dish consisting of meat cut into thin slices, stacked into a cone-like shape, and it can be made with chicken, beef, lamb, turkey, or veal. Yeah, so it's one of those things where, and then you have the building there at the end. I love the fact that building just had the A on it. Like, that was the Avengers type of building now. Yeah, so, and actually, here's a little tidbit. Chris Evans wore a prosthesis beard. He had to cover that up for that post-scene credit scene because he had actually just came off filming Snowpiercer. And he started to sport a beard, and they asked him to shave it. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. So actually, when he's like this and he's got his hand covered, he's actually wearing not wearing a beard, but he's actually got partially a part of a beard on. Yeah, so to make it consistent. So yeah. The other post-credit scene, of course, is the iconic one. So we got our first look at Thanos. So actually, Josh Whedon didn't know what to do with Thanos originally. He said this, honestly, I kind of hung Thanos out to dry. I love Thanos. I love his apocalyptic vision, his love affair with death. I love his power, but I don't really understand it. He had a lot of power, and he was cool in the comics. And I'm like, Thanos is the ultimate Marvel villain. And then I was like, I don't know exactly what I would do with Thanos. So I liked what the Russos did so much, and I thought Josh Brolin killed it. He did an amazing job of keeping that performance on screen. But it wasn't like, here goes a set of directions. I was like, I'm going to get through this. Ultron. Map the next 4 years, and I'll come to the premiere, which I did. So it was pretty cool. But it was just interesting to see how they didn't know what to do with Thanos, who was the big bad, obviously, and set up phase the whole thing for the next 10 years. And he is the ultimate big bad. I mean, you've got Ultron, a couple others, but he is the guy. Now, do you think, let me ask you this, do you think they were better served going with Thanos first? Or could you have seen them actually going with an Ultron first, and then, let's say, a 3 and a 4, and phase 3 and a 4 and a 5 doing Thanos? Would that have worked?
I think, no. I mean, Thanos was kind of this big looming figure. I mean, I kind of missed the fact that they didn't have, like, the glowing eyes and stuff that they had in the ending clip with the actual end game movie. But I think he was just the thing that made me excited because, you know, like, when are you going to bring back the purple monster guy? You know, I think he was the big bad, and I think he was the best option. I mean, they could have done other villains, but I think he's the best one, the best option. I'm glad they did him.
So now let me ask you this. Do you have a problem with him, the way he looks at the end of The Avengers and then the way he looked in, let's say, Endgame? Or aesthetically, you don't really care? It's about the character.
It's about the character. I mean, his character was very strong, and I didn't really pay as much attention to the look, but I do wish they would have had, like, glowing eyes. Like, I really thought that was something that was super great from the cutscene, but they didn't really keep it. They just kind of got rid of that later on. So aesthetically, he was okay, but it was more about the character that was more important than the look.
Because there are some people out there that's like Darth Vader, okay? Some people think Darth Vader should, the way he looked in 1977, they think that that's the way they should have looked in Return of the Jedi and moving forward. But, you know, because...
Well, it's the voice.
No, I agree. But a lot of people were like, well, he should have kept that rustic. You're right, though. I totally agree with you. I don't think it had anything to do with him aesthetically. I think it was about how he played it. And I will say this much. The motion capture was exponentially back here today than it was back in 2012. So I don't think that that was any major difference. I mean, because you didn't really see any of the armor either. If you remember, he just stands up, you see a shot of the hand, and then his head turns. So you don't see any of the armor. So that's something else. But yeah, so as we close phase one, we had five movies. We had Iron Man, we had Iron Man 2, we had Thor, we had Captain America First Avenger, and we had The Avengers. Do me a favor and try to rank it for me 5-1. I think I know which ones you're going to put, but I want the listeners to hear it.
Well, okay, so I'm going to start from like my lowest to my high. Okay. I'd say Captain America, the First Avenger, just because I'm not a huge fan of Captain America, so I put him at the bottom. I'm not even including Incredible Hulk in my list.
No, we're not, because we didn't cover that.
Yeah, that's not in my...
Sorry, people, you don't get the Incredible Hulk. Moving on. Number 4.
And then number 4 would be Iron Man 2, so is Thor. I just thought that it was a better character representation. It wasn't so jam-packed. It was actually just a good middle, beginning, and end. It was an okay movie, not super strong, but I still liked it. And then, of course, Iron Man, the OG, and then Marvel's The Avengers, because that's the movie, like, you know, all these other movies I have to rewatch and, like, think about the details, but Marvel's Avengers, like, even 10 years from now, I just remember every single scene from that movie. I think it's the best.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you on every single ranking that you did. I'll put Captain America, First Avenger at 5. It was a good opening film, and that's what these are. They're all opening films. We're getting the story of all these people. And then you've got Thor. That was okay, you know, and then, actually, you know what, I probably put Thor at 4, just because it was good. It wasn't great. I mean, there were a couple of good shots in it. We get introduced to Loki and had a good cast. Then probably Iron Man 3. Or not Iron Man 3, I'm sorry, Iron Man 2. It was okay. It was not as good as the original, but still okay. And then I like the whole proxy thing with Justin Hammer's character and him, you know, with Mickey Rourke being the villain, Whiplash. But I have to put, as you were saying, Iron Man 2, the original Iron Man, I got to put that at 2. Just because it was the first movie and it was so well constructed. And then I would agree with you. I put the Avengers at 1. I mean, to me, forget about, and the numbers, while they speak for themselves, it just was a great script. And I got to, looking it back on it, even 10 years, I mean, I watched it this morning and it's like, I've seen the movie 7 or 8 times, but it's still going back and going, wow. Now, I will say you could have cut maybe 5 or 10 minutes of the New York battle out, but I'm nitpicking. But yeah, and it sets everything up for what's to come. And I mean, we've got a whole another phase, and it's okay. Now people are really, really excited to see what's going to go on, and we have a ton of good movies in phase 2 coming up. And it's, but yeah, I think the Avengers is definitely, for me, and we talked about this, I think the Avengers is a top 5 film. Of all of the films, and I mean, I'm including Black Panther, I'm including Winter Soldier, I'm including Endgame, you know. So, and while it varies from person to person, but it started really everything. So.
And I think a lot of people would agree with you. I mean, when you ask, like, just any person on the street, probably the Avengers is going to be in their top five or their top 10.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, even it's one of those movies, Anne, that if a person didn't even, let's say they were living under a rock for 15 years and they said, okay, I want to get into the MCU. What movies, give me five movies to watch. It's probably going to be Civil War, a couple others, Guardians maybe, because that's got an Infinity Stone, you know, a couple others. But the Avengers is right up there. And so I think of all of the Avengers movies, and we'll get into this later on, but all of the Avengers movies, this one was right up there with Endgame. But I would put this better, that much closer than Endgame. Because at the end of the day, Endgame was more, if you took everything about it, Endgame was just a time travel story.
Yeah.
While it was a finale, it was still a time travel story.
There's too much in it, to tell you the truth. I thought Avengers had the right amount of characters, a succinct. Endgame just had too many people in it.
Okay, so, yeah, phase one is done. So next week, what we're going to do is we are going to go on to Iron Man 3. And that's going to be a blast because we're moving through this pretty quickly. And then don't forget, for our listeners, Sci-Fi Sunday is right around the corner. A couple weeks, we're going to be starting Sci-Fi Sunday. Jeff Akin and myself, if you haven't listened to that interview, go listen to that. He's a blast. We're going to be doing all the Sci-Fi Sunday podcasts. We're going to be doing all the Star Trek podcasts. Then we're going to be doing all the Star Wars podcasts. And then we're going to do sci-fi movies from the past. That's going to be a blast. And yeah, so I'm David Steele.
And I'm Anne Cargard.
And you have been listening to Real Talk.